Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Schon mal eine Ferienunterkunft gebucht, die der reinste Horror war?
Das sieht gar nicht aus wie auf den Fotos.
Ah, ist da eine Tür hinter all den Spinnen?
Dann probier eine App, mit der ein Happy End gewiss ist.
Ah, perfekt.
Alles gut, du hast bei Fevo direkt gebucht.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary, The Cultural Frontline, from the BBC World Service. 20 years ago, hundreds of previously unknown masterpieces by leading artists of the Russian avant-garde from just one collection suddenly burst onto the art scene, causing excitement, high demand, and high prices. But are they real or just worthless fakes? I'm Grigor Atanasian, a journalist with the BBC Russian Service, and I have been working with three specialists turned art detectives, Konstantin Akinsha, Andrei Vasiliev, and James Butterwick, as well as forensic experts for a BBC TV documentary to discover more about the authenticity of the works of art from one mysterious source, the Zaks collection.
The problem is not just that the Russian avant-garde forgeries are being sold for millions of dollars. Forgeries are turning up in museums, in exhibitions, and in art books. There are so many forgeries.
The Russian avant-garde is a brief but explosive experiment in modern art that pioneered bold geometrical shapes and dynamic color. It was developed in the early 20th century by artists from territories that are now part of Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, many people also use the term Soviet and Ukrainian avant-garde as well. Art historian, curator, and journalist Konstantin Akinsha.
Why is this movement so important? It was a form of radical modernism, which rejected all the standards and foundations of the pre-existing art. In the early years of Soviet power, avant-garde became more or less the official art movement of the new Russia.
But this celebration of this radical experiment didn't last long. By the mid-1930s, the pictures were banned by Stalin and only rediscovered after the Second World War.
Demand began, but there was very little supply. Diplomats traveling between the Soviet Union and the West started bringing out paintings by avant-garde artists in their suitcases. Of course, these paintings didn't have a traceable history. In 1996, my colleagues and I published a story in the Art News magazine called Fake, The Betrayal of the Russian Avant-Garde. The fallout was massive. Some auction houses even fired heads of their Russian art departments. But this didn't solve the problem. In the late 1990s, there was another new wave of forgeries.
You can say that a wave of forgeries has flooded the whole world. My name is Andrei Vasiliev. I am a retired psychiatrist and longtime collector of paintings and drawings. I wrote a book about one particular painting which was hailed as an outstanding work by Malevich. It was put on sale for 22 million euros. It ended with me proving with absolute mathematical precision that the work had been painted by an artist called Jagupova. I realized that I had developed a taste for this, and that in my old age I'd like to catch somebody in the act. That's when I remembered the Leonid Zaks's collection of Russian avant-garde art, and I started doing some research. Leonida Zaksa, и начал собирать по ней
материалы. Paintings from the privately owned Zaks collection have been sold to museums and private collectors around the world. It was in the early 2000s that Leonid Zaks appeared on the art scene in the Belarus capital Minsk, asking to exhibit some of his more than 200 previously unknown canvases. This included works from some of the great masters, names like L. Lisitsky, Alexander Rodchenko, Natalia Goncharova, and Lyubov Popova. Zaks claimed that his relatives had assembled this unique collection. Konstantin Akinsha and Andrei Vasiliev have examined the story for us.
Once upon a time, in the city of Yekaterinoslav, which is now called Dnipro, there lived a simple cobbler named Zalman Zaks.
According to Zaks, his grandfather was inspired and developed an interest in radical modernism visiting French and Belgian banks in the city of Yekaterinoslav.
Well, here's the thing. There was no such bank. It's not recorded anywhere in the annals of Russian banking history. Zalman Zaks had three children. One of them, Moses Zaks, left to fight in World War II and disappeared. The second son, Isaac, showed no interest in avant-garde art. And so he fades from our story. That just leaves the daughter, Anna, or Nehama. According to Leonid Zaks, she was a doctor, and crucially, between 1944 and 1945, she worked as a medic in the Belarusian countryside, providing medical assistance to the local peasantry. Allegedly, as a token of gratitude for the medical help she provided, these peasants gave her works by Lisitsky, Kluun, Exter, and Tatlin.
Where did the peasants get these works from? Lisitsky, Suetin, and Chashnik had indeed lived in Vitebsk in the early 1920s, working with Malevich. But I wouldn't go as far as to say they were handing out their works to the peasants. The best bit of all is the story of Leonid Zaks' uncle Moses. According to Mr. Zaks' account, he reappeared in 1955, arriving in the USSR as an American businessman who helped Soviet companies procure supplies from the USA. Not many Americans penetrated the Iron Curtain and crossed the borders of the Soviet Union in 1955. Russia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs checked their archives and informed us that no one named Moses Zaks had crossed the border of the Soviet Union during that time. We have examined the entire provenance of the Zaks collection, and every element of the provenance is unsubstantiated. Here we have a classic provenance myth. In an interview he gave to the Kiev magazine Antiquar, Leonid Zaks said he'd been very lucky because he met a Swiss gallerist called Suzanne Orlando. And through her, he had sold most of his art collection. I should say that the Orlando Gallery has long attracted the attention of those tracking Russian avant-garde fakes. Many of the Russian artworks sold by this gallery have raised significant doubts.
Konstantin Akinsha. The Orlando Gallery in the Swiss city of Zurich was where the Blum family bought several Russian avant-garde pictures, including by L. Lisitsky and Lyubov Popova, both for around $500,000. After the death of her parents, their daughter, Beatrice Gampel McNally, was told by valuers of her parents' estate that the paintings from the Zaks collections were worthless, with auction houses in London refusing to touch them.
When my father was blind after 2005, my mother had already started suffering from vascular dementia. She continued buying, mostly from a gallery in Zurich, Suzanne Orlando, Orlando Gallery. She thought that Suzanne Orlando was her friend and would sell her genuine, authentic art that would hold its value.
Art dealer James Butterwick goes to visit Beatrice Gampel McNally at her London home.
Do you think that they were duped on purpose, Beatrice?
I think some people yes and some people no.
I think that's probably a very good answer. This is always the problem, is how do you show intent? That is one of the difficulties, is to actually prove that someone intended to defraud.
James, I know you're the expert of all these paintings that present such problems to me, among which are Lisitsky paintings, where I would really like your opinion about it.
I'll go and see them with the greatest pleasure.
James Butterwick travels to Zurich to examine the Lisitsky painting called Prone. It is in the possession of Beatrice's son, Eric.
I think the most important thing is that during my grandfather's life, he believed it was an original that he'd bought. And that's the most important thing. At the end of the day, everybody would love it to be authentic, but it doesn't take away from the style, which does replicate Lisitsky's.
It wouldn't change your feelings regarding how you view the picture and what emotions it gives to you.
No, because the reaction between a person and a painting is an emotional engagement you have with those shapes, those forms, those colours.
You're listening to the documentary, The Cultural Frontline, from the BBC World Service. I'm Grigor Atanasian, and I'm on the trail of the mysterious Russian avant-garde Zaks collection, paintings from which were sold to museums and private collectors around the world. But are they genuine masterpieces or worthless fakes? Konstantin Akinshe explains the steps to authenticate a picture.
The evaluation of any work of art rests on three pillars. One pillar is provenance, the history of the work's existence. The second pillar is the opinion of an art expert who can visually determine if there are any inconsistencies that raise doubts. And the third pillar is technical analysis.
Leonid Zaks would present buyers with reports from a lab in Germany, confirming that pigments and other materials match those used in Lisitsky's lifetime. But this alone isn't enough to prove the painting is genuine. We bring the Lisitsky painting back to London and take it to two independent labs. Denis Moiseev is the director of Hephaestus Analytical, who use AI to spot fakes.
Essentially, what the machine is able to do is find the digital fingerprint of an artist, because it's looking for all of these variables that are and stay consistent throughout an artist's body of work, be it the brush size, the pressure with which certain brush strokes are applied, the colours that are used, the spacing in between compositional elements. All of those things the machine can see and can analyse across the training set. So what we're going to do is use a high-resolution image of the subject painting, run it through the machine, through the various algorithms that we have, that allow it to be compared to a body of 20 original bona fide Lisitskys that we know are real. If that painting fits inside that cloud, inside that contour, we can say with 99% confidence that the painting is authentic. If it's outside of that cloud, we can be fairly confident that the painting is a forgery.
Dr. Jelena Dolny, the director of London's branch of Art Discovery Lab, also examines the painting. A leading scientist in the field of technical analysis, she has discredited dozens of Russian avant-garde forgeries. We recorded our interview with Dr. Nadolny before she died last year.
So when looking at this painting, one thing we're going to want to look at is the signature. So here, it looks very much like the signature was put on at the same time as the paint. It kind of intermingles with the underlying paint, so you see a little bit of mixing going on. No signs at all that it's later additions. Looking at the painting, we found a whole range of pigments that would have been perfectly acceptable for Lisitsky's time. It was an oil paint, so superficially, the object looked good for that first level check. Immediately with the UV light, what we found down the microscope were these fragments of fibers embedded in the surface. Let's see if I can pull them up. When you're working with material, there's always environmental things that interact with the paint. It's, people clean their brushes or people's jumpers have fuzzy fibers. Yeah, if it's just on the surface, fine, but it's going under the paint. It's actually stuck in. Here's another little bunch. These are all going into the surface. They're like little earthworms sticking their heads up out of the ground, if you think of it that way.
Dr. Nadolny analyzes the fibers she's discovered within the paint.
So these particular fibers that we found in the painting were treated with substances that were developed in the early part of the 20th century, but were really first commercialized and brought onto the market only after the World Wars. Being able to identify them was right there a very hard indicator that would even stand up where we needed to take this to court. It's like looking at something that should have been 18th century and there's a flat screen TV in the background. It's not possible. You can't have it. It doesn't work. So by finding them in the substance, we know this isn't an early 20th century painting.
Now we should be able to get a result. And the results are in. That's interesting. On the simplified graph, it's quite clear that the magenta line representing the subject painting is really far away from the expected distribution of what we'd expect from a authentic Lisitsky. Therefore, I'm afraid the painting is a forgery.
Denis Moiseev. The BBC asked Dr. Nadolny to check out another painting belonging to Beatrice's parents. It was also part of the Zaks collection and also bought at the Irlanda Gallery. Said to be by Lyubov Popova, the lab concluded it was also a forgery. We took this information back to Beatrice Gampel McNally to get her reaction to the news.
First of all, shock, anger that the parents, who were genuine enthusiastic collectors, had been duped like that. It would be nice to know that the people who duped, willingly or unwillingly, my parents, would own up to some sort of responsibility of taking a lot of money from my parents and giving them something that is clearly not what they purported it to be. So I would be happy for that to be cleared up, just to be fair to the memory of my parents.
We have asked the advice of leading art and culture lawyer Tim Maxwell. He told us about the authenticity guarantee, which means that if you buy something that is proven to be a fake, you can return it to the seller and be refunded. But there is a period of limitation, 6 years in the UK or 10 years in Switzerland. That means that after that time you cannot be refunded, even if you bought a fake. There are exemptions. For fraud, the limitation period starts when the victims discover that they have been defrauded. But this is incredibly hard to prove.
Zaks is a lucky man. His collection was sold without any problems, and then it was effectively forgotten. Zaks disappeared from the art market.
As Konstantin Akinsha says, Leonid Zaks has disappeared from the art world. So our next step is to try and find him. We tried to contact him for several months, even heading to Israel on a tip that he might be there. His daughter forwarded a message for us, but to no avail. However, 2 weeks before our TV documentary was due to go out, I suddenly got a message from Leonid Zaks. He wanted to talk. Was this finally our chance to get the real story of the Zaks collection?
Hello?
Hello, Leonid Isakovich?
So, you have questions for me?
We have a few questions. What's happened to the rest of your collection? There has been no coverage and no exhibition for a long time.
Let me tell you. Most paintings are just stuck in storage right now.
And where is the collection now?
I'd rather not go into this. Where is it? I'd like to avoid this and other questions, including questions about money. The collection is stored in a European warehouse.
How do you know that these paintings are real and the story behind them is true?
I learned that the paintings were genuine piece by piece as experts studied them. My late mother, I always trusted her. She was a very honest person. At the very end of her life, she wrote it all down, what I told you about Moses Zaks and the whole story.
But neither the facts, the archival research or expert opinion support your account.
Well, whom should I trust? A bunch of strangers or my own mother? What is written is no longer a legend. It's a fact. An incorrect fact, perhaps, but not just a legend or a story.
Would you like to apologize to Beatrice? Her family bought two paintings that were from your collection. They cost 400,000 Swiss francs each.
Сколько?
How much?
400,000 Swiss francs each.
Это явно неправда.
That can be true.
We've got records. У нас есть документы.
Гораздо меньше.
I've got a lot less. I've never seen that kind of money in my life. As for the lady who bought those works and can't sell them, I feel sorry for her. I know what it's like. But what can I do? I can't do anything. I think she needs to do more research, because one expert says one thing and the next one says something else.
She asked all the leading experts and auction houses. Nobody wanted to touch these works.
Well, they weren't my paintings then. My paintings were irreproachable.
So, no apologies, no explanation, and no new light on the Zaxa affair. We know that several works from the Zaxa collection are now on the market being offered to private clients. That means that somebody can be paying millions of dollars for these works of art. Konstantin Akinsha.
Это хороший урок. Урок очень простой.
It's an important and simple lesson. Russian avant-garde is a kind of a hot potato, that's difficult to handle. And it should be treated with great care. Museums and galleries should do their own research before exhibiting or putting them on sale. They are in the danger zone.
Вы в опасной зоне.
Schon mal eine Ferienunterkunft gebucht, die der reinste Horror war?
Das sieht gar nicht aus wie auf den Fotos.
Ah, ist da eine Tür hinter all den Spinnen?
Dann probier eine App, mit der ein Happy End gewiss ist.
Ah, perfekt.
Alles gut, du hast bei Fevo direkt gebucht.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Dr. Jeline Nadolny from the Art Discovery Lab.
So we're often asked, why bother? What's the big deal? We're looking at overpriced pieces of art that rich people buy. So what if you are wrong? Beyond that, it goes to the public interest as well. Public money is spent to acquire things for museums. Students go to school to learn about objects that are held up as authentic and representative of the historic record of a particular culture. It matters to us as a culture. This is our historical record, and if we allow this to happen, we're destroying our own past.
Recently, one painting from the Zaxa collection called The Clockmaker by the Russian artist Ivan Klun appeared in the background of not one, but two Oscar-winning films, Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer and also The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar by Wes Anderson. The Minneapolis Institute of Art owns two paintings from the Zaxa collection, including the mysterious The Clockmaker. For a few months, we've been exchanging emails with them, and they told us they would conduct their own investigation into Klun's painting. They didn't share the results with the BBC, but the painting has now been removed from display, and on the MIA website, the painting is now only attributed to Ivan Klun. The description also includes information from the BBC that this painting comes from the Zaxa collection, and where previously the website said the Institute had reviewed the painting's documentation, now it stresses that the data may not have been reviewed and may be inaccurate or incomplete. When an artwork is put on sale, it is often accompanied by certification. Dr. Anton Uspensky is a senior researcher at the State Russian Museum in St. Petersburg. He's authored several complimentary articles on the Zaxa collection, which repeat the Zaxa family legend. Dr. Uspensky's articles were presented by the Erlander Gallery in Zurich as proof of the Zaxa collection provenance. This was the same gallery who also sold paintings to the parents of Beatrice Campbell McNally. When I spoke to Dr. Uspensky, he insisted that he'd never corroborated Zach's story and never endorsed the collection.
My article definitely didn't claim those works were authentic. I was simply asked to write about this collection and its history. I met Zach's, we talked, and he told me the story. All I wrote was based on his words. These are family stories. They are not supported by anything or recorded anywhere. He said that a relative of his, an uncle, or maybe not an uncle, these are family stories.
So, using your articles to sell these paintings is a wrong thing to do?
Absolutely. It is wrong. It's rigging.
Dr. Anton Uspensky. Other articles on the alleged history of the Zach's collection, which have been subsequently used to sell the paintings, were written by Dr. Tatiana Katovich, an art historian from Belarus. I spoke to her via Zoom and asked what she knew about the origins of the Zach's paintings.
I told him right away that in Belarus, finding traces from the time of the Second World War, from before the war and after the war, is practically impossible because our archives were partially destroyed. I wrote about these paintings only based on the chemical analysis from Germany and expert opinions of the art historians whose names mean something to me.
However, you did not come to definite conclusions or judgments about its authenticity and its provenance.
No.
That's very interesting, because I have seen how your articles, translated into English, French, and so on, were used to sell works from the Zach's collection at auctions and galleries.
That's news to me, the use of my name. Nowhere did I say that I guarantee that a work was painted by the said artist. Do you understand? Anyone who reads Russian can see that. But my conscience is clear, because money was never involved. My expertise was never involved. I don't know what to do about these articles. I have to think about this. How do I prove my moral integrity? I don't know.
Dr. Tatiana Katovich. Konstantin Akinsha, one of the people who discovered the anomalies in the Zach's collection, thinks what we have uncovered is just the tip of the iceberg.
I hope the investigation we've conducted is a small but significant step towards cleaning up the market of Russian avant-garde. It is a first step. Fundamental research lies ahead. And the problem we are facing is much larger than the history of one collection, the collection of Leonid Zach's.
You've been listening to the documentary The Cultural Frontline from the BBC World Service. The reporter and producer was me, Grigor Atanasian, and this World Service English version was produced by Andrea Kidd. You can see the full TV documentary, The Zach's Affair, Anatomy of a Fake Collection, on the BBC iPlayer or YouTube.
Schon mal eine Ferienunterkunft gebucht, die der reinste Horror war?
Das sieht gar nicht aus wie auf den Fotos.
Komm, der Eingang ist hinten rum.
Was zum...
Ist da eine Tür hinter all den Spinnen?
Dann probier eine App, mit der ein Happy End gewiss ist.
Ah, guck mal, keine einzige Spinne in Sicht.
Wo wollen wir die nächsten 8 Stunden als erstes entspannen?
Alles gut, du hast bei Fevo direkt gebucht.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.